we would like to intervene with youth who are already in the court system, and also kids who may be at risk of becoming involved with the court system.
Expanding tribal courts. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, federal legislation helps put land into community use.
The land transfer is essential to facilitating the future construction of a new community wellness clinic.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A body found outside the Bering Sea Island community of Gamble has been identified as a missing woman from the village. Alaska State Trooper spokesman Tim Despain says the woman was 22-year-old Gladys Anangayu of Gamble. Family members reported Anangayu missing Sunday. Searchers on Monday found a body several miles outside of Gamble. Despain says there were difficulties in making a positive identification, but the state medical examiner confirmed the identity. Troopers earlier Friday announced that a person of interest in Anangayu's disappearance, 37-year-old Benjamin Bushu, had killed himself. Tim Despain says Bushu on Tuesday shot himself outside his home before he could be questioned. Despain says investigators believe Bushu was the last person seen with Anangayu. A U.S. House committee held a hearing Wednesday on legislation that would transfer federal lands in Tanana and Dillingham to tribal entities for health care facilities. H.R. 4289 would convey 11 acres in Tanana to the Tanana Tribal Council. Council Secretary Dorothy Jordan testified before the House Indian, Insular, and Alaska Native Affairs Subcommittee in support of transfer of the former Indian Health Service hospital site.
The land transfer is essential to facilitating the future construction of a new community wellness clinic.
Jordan pointed to pressing issues the wellness clinic will address, including substance abuse and suicide prevention. She said having the property will help the tribe apply for grants to fund it. The other land transfer in the bill is for 1.4 acres of land in Dillingham. Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation Chief Operations Officer Leisha Scottford said a dental clinic is already being constructed on the land under an encumbered deed transferred by the IHS last year.
In order to start construction, Bristol Bay reluctantly accepted a quitclaim deed to the 1.4 acres from the Indian Health Service that is contrary to our rights as self-governance compactor.
Scottford says getting clear title to the land would free the tribe from IHS oversight of the dental clinic project and liability for historic contamination on the land. The House resolution supports granting clear title to both properties to tribes via warranty deed. Bill sponsor subcommittee chair Representative Don Young says he'd push to move the bill as soon as possible. Companion legislation introduced by Senator Lisa Murkowski was approved in the Senate Indian Affairs Committee last month. The state and a regional development group are combining forces to develop a new business and management plan for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Governor Bill Walker and Southeast Conference President Gary White signed a memorandum of understanding to begin the process yesterday. Speaking at a ceremony at Juneau's Auk Bay Ferry Terminal, Walker says he hoped the effort would stabilize ferry funding.
Every year you sort of wonder what's the budget going to be like, how much money is going to be there. You don't do that on the Seward Highway, the Richardson Highway, but it's always going to be there. And that's why we want to have sort of the stable level of funding that we're talking about that we have available to us if we'll just sort of replumb our revenues a bit so we can look out and say we know what the budget will be 5 years from now.
The Southeast Conference, which includes regional, municipal, business, and tribal officials, was the main force behind creating the ferry system more than 50 years ago. The state already has a Marine Transportation Advisory Board made up of of port city leaders, ferry customers, and the travel industry. But it has no real authority and is often ignored when important decisions are made. The Memorandum of Understanding commits the state to contracting with the conference to develop a new strategic plan. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, research that looks at future earthquake potential for the Aleutian Islands.
You like the place you live, you know, it comes with its risks. So it's just good to be aware of the risks. Doesn't mean it's going to happen in your time.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
President Obama is coming back to Alaska, but only for a few hours. Aviators in South Central are being asked to observe a temporary flight restriction Saturday evening between 4 and 7:15 p.m. According to a newsletter from the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the restrictions are due to a presidential visit. A notice to airmen from the Federal Aviation Administration says planes within a 7-mile radius of Ted Stevens International Airport are prohibited from operating. There is an exception for law enforcement, emergency medical, and scheduled commercial flights. Pilots flying beyond the 7-mile inner core and a 30-mile radius outer ring are asked to limit operations as much as possible and stay in close contact with air traffic control. Obama is visiting Asia next week, where he's expected to become the first sitting president to tour Hiroshima. It's normal during presidential visits to Asia for Air Force One to stop in Alaska for refueling. 33 public use airports will be affected by the temporary restrictions, stretching from Willow down to Hope. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough School Board has announced a replacement for outgoing school superintendent Dina Paramo. On Wednesday, the board offered the borough's top school administrator job to Jean Stone, who is currently the district's assistant superintendent of instruction. Stone's contract is for 1 year only. Stone has served in his current position since 2010. He has also been a principal at Palmer Junior Middle School. The school board is expected to approve Stone's contract by June. His job starts July 1st. Two new tribal court programs are getting off the ground at Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more on what's being done in the southeast part of the state to help reduce recidivism.
The biggest gap that I see just at the youth center is housing, safe housing.
At Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall, a framework is being created. It's part of a larger conversation to identify what's holding some people back from reaching their potential: childhood trauma, unstable home lives, and a disconnect from culture. Colleen Bilardi is one of the coordinators at Central Council's Juvenile Justice Court. She said at this point, the program is still being developed.
But what we do know is that we would like to intervene with youth who are already in the court system, and also kids who may be at risk of becoming involved with the court system.
The juvenile court could take the shape of therapeutic court or family conferencing. It's funded by a $550,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Justice, spanning over 3 years, but they want to make the program sustainable. Bilardi said youth mentorship will play a key role.
And then we want to teach them traditional ways of putting up food, carving. What is it to have an elder in your life? And what does that mean to have an elder in your life?
A different program aimed at helping adult offenders is also underway. Tribal Judge Deborah O'Gara said the court primarily handles family law, but soon it will also be able to sentence some criminal cases.
It was the state court judges who came to us and said, do you guys want to be involved with this?
In April, Central Council signed the agreement with the state. Defendants who plead guilty or are found guilty will be able to have their cases transferred to Central Council. From there, they'll go through circle sentencing.
So we'll have more time to delve into what is it that you are is causing you to do this criminal behavior.
O'Gara says other tribes up north have had success with the program. Eventually, Central Council wants to offer circle sentencing beyond Juneau and into other tribal courts in Southeast. She says typically in the state court system, the prosecutor or the judge have no connection to the defendant.
Whereas in tribal court, we're going to have family members and members of the person's own tribe there, and often their grandma or their grandpa or their aunts or uncles or even their parents are going to, siblings are going to be there in the court, that they're having to explain why they are doing what they're doing.
Which O'Gara says can sometimes be linked to poverty, childhood trauma, or substance abuse. Depending on the case, the sentencing outcome could be job training or treatment, and those recommendations will be sent back to the state. That could start up by the end of summer. O'Gara says she hopes the new programs can help with the healing. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
The scenario of a massive earthquake in western Alaska is the basis of a study by Hawaiian scientists. In the next 50 years, there's a 9% chance of an Aleutian Island earthquake so strong it could send a devastating tsunami to Hawaii. That's according to researchers from the University of Hawaii at Manoa. KUCB's Zoe Sobel has more.
A magnitude 9.0 or greater earthquake is what researchers are referring to. But what does a megaquake look like? Think big, like Tohoku, the 2011 Japan earthquake and tsunami.
If there were to be another really, really giant earthquake in the Aleutians, it would have the potential to generate a big tsunami like we've seen recently.
That's geologist Rob Witter of the United States Geological Survey. His work looks at the frequency of past giant earthquakes in the Aleutians, especially large quakes that might cause tsunamis. This research can be used for national seismic hazard maps, as well as to create tsunami evacuation plans. While Witter studies what happened in the ancient past, geophysicist Rhett Butler looks to the future. He works on estimating the probabilities of future earthquakes. While watching videos of Tohoku, the University of Hawaii at Manoa geophysicist began wondering if Hawaii had its estimates right.
We are surrounded by the ocean here, so when we're hit by a very large tsunami wave, it affects all sides of the island. If you're in California, you walk 10 kilometers inland and, you hardly notice anything other than it's a general panic, okay? But here in the islands, all of our roads are along the seashore. You know, we have lots of hospitals, we have airports. I mean, it would be an absolute infrastructure disaster.
An infrastructure disaster that the State of Hawaii Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan estimates could cost about $40 billion. Here in Unalaska, if you feel the ground shake, Witter says be prepared to move.
If you feel strong shaking for 30 seconds or more, you should get to high ground quickly. And if you're in the maritime community or the maritime trade, you need to get to deep water fast as well, because even in the protected waters of the harbors, strong currents can occur, and those can cause damage to ports and harbor facilities.
Butler's research does not guarantee a megaquake. The pressure in the Aleutian subduction zone could be released by a series of smaller earthquakes. And he says he's not trying to scare anyone.
You like the place you live, you know, it comes with its risks. So it's just good to be aware of the risks. It doesn't mean it's going to happen in your time, but you never know. The Japanese didn't think it was going to happen in their time, so they were surprised.
He wants to provide data so that everyone can make informed decisions. In Unalaska, I'm Zoe Sobel.
Alaska's rural communities have seen an increase in bed bug infestation in recent years. It's a problem that can feel overwhelming, embarrassing, and difficult to control. Now the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation and the Tanana Chiefs Conference are helping rural Alaskans fight bed bugs with a $100,000 grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. KDLG's Hannah Colton reports.
It was the dead of winter about 6 years ago when Tina Tinker first started finding itchy bites on her body.
That's how I found out, because I'm kind of allergic to bed bugs because I swell up really bad. I mean, I get a big welt.
She says she and her husband did the first thing they could think of. They threw out everything in the bedroom.
We moved the bed, the dressers, everything out of my room, and we stuck them all outside. At the time, it was like 30, 40 below.
She'd find out later that freezing isn't the best way to kill bedbugs. But this was just the beginning. Tinker lives in the village of Aleknagik. She's the environmental coordinator there. And at the time the bedbugs struck, she did not own a washing machine. So her next step was a major trip to the laundromat about a half hour away.
So I had to bring him down to the Dillingham laundromat And that cost me about $700 just to dry and wash those clothes.
Over the next year and a half, Tinker waged an all-out war against her bedbugs. She says there wasn't any program or resources to turn to locally, so she was going off of hearsay and her own research.
I basically went on Google, and from there, you know, I kind of took it in my own hands.
It was an expensive effort. She had to order supplies to be shipped in from Anchorage. She took a week off work once to steam, scrub, and vacuum her entire house. And Tinker says her infestation cost her her social life, too.
I felt embarrassed, and I felt like people kind of shunned me once they found out that I had bed bugs. But then I kind of told my friends, too, you know, you shouldn't be coming to my home because you could bring them back to your home and infest your home.
Tinker says she lost a lot of sleep to stress over those months. But her diligence and hard work finally paid off. The bugs were gone and stayed gone for 4 or 5 years. Then a few weeks ago, she had another scare when her son came home from a trip and found bites on his body. This time, though, Tinker wasn't alone.
My name is Jennifer Scarrata, Environmental Health Specialist for Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation.
Scarrata and her team are coordinating with the Tanana Chiefs Conference on a $100,000 EPA grant to fight bedbugs in rural Alaska. Bedbugs have been on the rise recently in the U.S., but Scarrata says it's even worse in bush Alaska, where people depend on air travel to get anywhere.
It generally crawls onto a person or their luggage. So since we have to get on a plane pretty much to go everywhere, that's one of the reasons. And then also, we don't have tools in rural Alaska that we do on the road system or the lower 48.
And this is Scarrata's main focus right now. She's already sent out nearly 30 toolkits. Along with the toolkit, Scarrata gives out information. She's trying to squash some misconceptions about bedbugs.
Because a lot of people ask all the time, they're like, is this a bedbug bite? And they'll hold out their arm or whatever. Some people don't even react to the bites because it's an allergic reaction. Some people might break out in a hive. Some people might just have a small red dot. So that's the first thing I try to let people know. You know, don't use the bite as a sign.
What's better, says Scarrata, is to look for the flat reddish-brown bug itself. You might also find the skin it sheds periodically, or you could find bedbug poop.
A lot of times that's the first sign people will see are the fecal stains, and they can look almost like a rust stain on your mattress.
Anyone can get bedbugs, but the Bristol Bay and Tanana Health Corporations are trying to slow that trend. They have dozens more toolkits to send out, and next year will be phase two. They're planning to buy hot boxes so communities can turn up the heat on their bedbugs together. Reporting in Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to a four-year college or other post-secondary education. Explore your talents and develop your dreams at Mount Edgecombe High School. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, bison. Earlier this month, President Obama signed into law the National Bison Legacy Act, making the American bison the nation's official mammal. The unusual legislation has no other purpose other than to make bison, more commonly referred to as buffalo, another national symbol. Equally strange, Alaska has 4 bison herds of its own that were established years ago for no apparent reason. As Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer reports, the president's endorsement sparks new interest in an animal that has survived for millions of years, despite near extinction.
It's a national icon like no other, evoking images of times past when great herds thundered across the Midwestern plains. The North American bison has graced the seal of the U.S. Department of the Interior for more than 100 years, while the celebrated story of its rise from the brink of extinction to recovery inspires the spirit. A small herd of these inspirational creatures briefly crashed a picnic of Alaska legislators and their staffers last summer on pasture land owned by livestock producer Todd Pettit.
Circle the cars, circle the cars.
We're parked on the end. I hope you have good insurance.
Pettit, whose privately owned herd supplies his commercial meat business, thinks nothing of walking among the hulking beasts at feeding time. He gives one a slap on its rear end that sends the animal scampering off like a chastened puppy, all 1,000 pounds of it.
Ow!
While Pettit's herd has been pretty much bred on his little pitchfork ranch near Palmer, four state-owned herds are living in the wild in Alaska. But why? Perhaps Darren Bruning, a Fish and Game regional supervisor, can answer that question best.
In 1928, 23 individual bison were translocated to interior Alaska from the National Bison Range in Montana. And they actually were brought by an individual, an enterprising individual, who lived in interior Alaska.
The Delta settlers back then wanted elk for hunting meat, but got Montana bison instead. From that seed herd, the territory, and later the state, established three others in the 1950s and 60s, one in Slana, one in Chitna, and another in the Farewell area of Iditarod fame. At first, they were just left on their own, but...
Years later, there was official effort, an organized effort to monitor the animals and track their population dynamics and their health and condition.
Pre-statehood, the practice of introducing species, Sitka deer, for example, to Alaska was not uncommon. Sometimes there were unintended consequences. Although the Delta herd thrived in its new home, decades later it achieved legendary status in the lexicon of Alaska boondoggles when a state agricultural project was established a little too close to the herd's range. For a while, it was buffalo versus barley farmers. Today, the state monitors the four wild bison herds to provide hunting opportunity for Alaskans. And there is an added bonus.
We have conducted genetic testing for numerous years on the Delta and the Farewell herds, and there has been no introgression of cattle genes detected. There's no reason to believe that the Chitna or Copper River herds would be any different since the source herd was the Delta herd.
Most lower 48 herds carry cattle genes. Because it was private conservationists who worked to keep the species alive during early restoration efforts. Despite its new lofty status as a U.S. symbol, the bison has no special federal protection unless it lives on federal land, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and there are no restrictions on privately owning an American bison.
Well, it's the best decision I ever made. I would never turn back from it.
That's Todd Pettit again. Back at his ranch, he tells how his family went from raising hay to raising milk cows until the decline in the valley's dairy industry forced them to get rid of the cows.
And I was happy to see him go. It was, you know, a lot of babysitting, a lot of pulling calves. But I wasn't done raising animals, and so I told him I was going to go get some buffalo. And my grandpa, I think he was pretty happy about it, but my grandma, she was pissed. Well, he finally got rid of them cows, and now you're bringing on buffalo. What are you going to do with them buffalo?
It doesn't take much urging to get him to sing the buffalo's praises. He says, unlike dairy cows, they are suited to Alaska's climate.
The brilliance of a bison is, if there's something underneath the snow that has food value, they'll get it. That big old head of theirs is just a bulldozer, you know, and they'll dig down through 3 foot of snowdrift to get to it.
The bison's honorary designation does nothing to diminish the status of the bald eagle, the country's national symbol. Alaska has more bald eagles than any other state, some 30,000 of them, and now the two national and spiritual symbols share a home. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Greg Martinez in Anchorage. Martinez is a UPS worker who moved to Alaska from New York 12 years ago.
A
I'm a married man. You know, I got my daughter. She's 9, and my son is 4. They get to enjoy the woods, you know, the lakes and the snow, mountains, the animals. You know, just seeing, you know, driving around and seeing a moose or an eagle anywhere. You know, that's I think that's pretty cool. It always amazed me, you know, being up here for so long. You know, and I stop, you know, every time that I see a moose, and I look like a tourist. Up here, you know, the people are nicer. You know, anybody could say hi, you know, and good morning. In New York, you know, it's not like that you don't find nice people, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of people, they in a rush to go to work, you know, do the daily routine. You know, there's no place like New York, but, you know, this is a, it's a pretty cool place up here. You know, right now, you know, every moment that I live up here, because I have family, you know, I got my kids, you know, it's like a good memory for me. Last summer, we went to the Alyeska Resort and for the blueberry picking, you know, so that was a great experience for me, you know, thinking that there was going to be some bears around, you know, so that was some pretty cool. Yeah, I'll probably be moving out. Not anytime soon, you know, I'm just taking one day at a time. You know, this is a great place, you know, especially when you got kids. This is one of the best places, you know, to raise your kids. But I'm a gypsy, you know, I like to be moving from one place to another.
Greg Martinez lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ellen Lockyer and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, and Hannah Colton in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, working with more than 100 Alaska communities and thousands of Alaskans. Today, ExxonMobil is producing natural gas condensate from the Point Thompson facilities. Alaska Pacific University is still accepting applications for its Early Honors Program. The Alaska Pacific University Early Honors Program satisfies high school graduation requirements while students earn college credits from a regionally accredited institution. Early Honors students gain these benefits and make the best use of their senior year of high school. More at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.